This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Good afternoon to you. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman produces the show, and Mark Hamrick's our first guest today from the Washington Bureau. He's the chief and senior economic analyst at Bankrate. Bankrate.com is their website. We were quoting from one of your Bankrate stories. I don't know if it was yours per se, Mark, about best states to retire in earlier this week as well. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much, John. Always a pleasure to be with both you and Pete, of course.
So let's talk a little bit about the hiring and the jobless rate. What's the wisdom from you on where we are and where we should be? Is it going in the right direction?
Well, I'd have to outsource my wisdom, but I can offer what will have to suffice as thoughts, and I appreciate the question. I think, first of all, whether it's the strains in the economy that we're experiencing right now, and in some cases the higher prices with the price of gasoline drawing some attention these days, I would just want to say disruption in the job market. I'm speaking from a hotel right now. I can tell you they don't have enough staff at this hotel, and that was my experience over a couple of trips that I've made since I've been fully vaccinated. But these are first world problems. But they do limit the capacity of the economy to operate at the level that businesses would like, and then the ability of those businesses to deliver the services and products that consumers would like. And we've seen that on everything, of course, from computer chips, semiconductors needed to make just about everything these days, lumber, price of lumber has come back down. In terms of what we've seen most recently, just yesterday we had the release of the new unemployment claims numbers. For the first time in 3 weeks, there was a modest increase, but it was almost the most slight of national increases in the sense that it was up by 2,000 and at a respectable level these days, below 400,000 at 373,000. For perspective, before the pandemic, we were a little above 200,000 and we were well above, we were in the millions at its zenith when people were losing jobs left and right. Yeah. So while no one wants to lose their job and we bemoan the loss of a job for anyone who experiences that, the macro issue, the issue for the bigger part of the economy, is not so much job cuts these days. Challenger Gray and Christmas, a company you know well there in Chicago, had just reported that the June job cut announcements were the lowest since 2000. So that's quite remarkable. So it's really now about piecing the puzzle pieces back together and sort of matching together the labor that is available, the workers that are available, with the demand that's quite omnipresent right now.
What's going to happen with the demand and the inability? I was at a Radisson Blue yesterday for a business dinner, two nights ago actually, and when we walk into a restaurant or a hotel or a bar now, you kind of know the service is going to be bad because they just can't get the people. And I wonder how that's going to change, how quickly that's going to change.
Well, it's already changed, right? And your question really is when will we get it resolved? I think it will take some time. I'm speaking from the state of West Virginia, where Democrats have to be conservative. And Governor Jim Justice here, for example, was one of those who did eliminate the extended and heightened unemployment benefits. But they're still having issues here in the state with getting their labor supply back to where it needs to be. They told me they had a job fair at this particular hotel. Three people showed up.
The people that had those jobs before, where are they today? What literally are they doing right now?
Well, some probably are remaining on the unemployment rolls for as long as they can. Some, I think that has been overly politicized, as seemingly just about everything can be these days. But I do think that some moved on. They may have moved in location. They may have moved on to another job. And some, according to the surveys that we see, they're not Bankrate surveys, but done by others, some are waiting still for childcare to come back, for the schools to open. And there's still a vaccine mistrust issue out there, I'm very sad to say. So I think, we'll get past September when these extended and heightened unemployment benefits go away totally nationwide, and that will, by its very definition, drive down the unemployment assistance payments that are going out, which are now still very high overall. The new claims are, as we just said, low and going lower. And I think it will take some time, John, but I do think that once we sort of get into the fall, people get back into more normal routines. I think that some of these things will resolve themselves.
I think you made an interesting point. We'll pick it up here in a minute. But if kids go to school and parents don't have to be home for the kids, and the kids aren't learning from home, presuming they'll opt for that, then the parents can go back to work, right? We'll talk to Mark Hamrick more. Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate. Mark Hamrick, he's the Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate. By the way, Mark, you were talking with us on the air, about the jobs and people's willingness or ability even to go back to them. Is that more on the lower, middle to lower side of the economic scale? Are the high-end jobs, the management jobs, are those, in fact, being filled?
I would say yes, to your point. Where we are seeing more wage increases are at the lower end of the wage spectrum as well. If we think about the areas that were on the leading edge of job loss, and those are sort of well-known suspects by now, leisure and hospitality, bars and restaurants, accommodations, hotels, live sports and entertainment. In some cases, and you know, you see the signs, you hear the anecdotes, it's being widely reported. Many of those entities, those organizations are paying more, or in some cases, advertising what seem to be surprisingly large hiring bonuses for jobs that wouldn't have been perhaps highly prized in the past. So, this is an interesting time, John, because, you know, as one who toils in the nation's capital for many years, you try to stare through some of this and try to figure out where the political bodies are buried, meaning, you know, how could this work out? And, you know, one of the debates that is ongoing right now is that inflation is an issue that the Republicans want to try to capitalize on, with the hope on their end that they'll be able to get some traction with that come the midterms. I know nobody wants to hear it 16 months from now. But the other part is that one person's wage pressure is another person's money in the bank, right? So, you know, if people are being paid more and there isn't burgeoning inflation to the extent that it's viewed as a tremendous pressure on the broader economy, it's hard to see how politicians can capitalize on an issue along the lines of, oh, people are making more money, but if inflation becomes a bigger problem or at least persists, mm-hmm. then I do think that that's something that obviously will be a focus of attention and discussion.
Well, every conversation we have about that runs into that wall. And I suspect if you're a person making $15 an hour, you're getting a little tired of hearing people say, if you make $16 an hour, either you'll cripple the business or you'll drive inflation. Like it's your fault that you want $16 an hour. I don't know that this solves anything, but so help me. If the owners of major corporations that make hundreds of millions or tens of millions or millions and millions of dollars would make less, would pay more taxes, I don't know that that would solve the problem. But when you see the guy that owns Amazon make that much money,
yeah.
And then the workers don't make as much money, you think maybe he could give back $100 million. I don't know if that would fix the problems for the employees, but it might make everybody a little more content. I'll put it that way.
Very well said. And it might attack some problems anyway. And when we think about the issues that we're all very familiar with, the high cost of shelter, rents and mortgages, home prices, the cost of education, the cost of health care, those are aspects of inflation which have been raging for years, right? But that doesn't get a lot of attention with respect to that kind of inflation. And I think those are the ones that are more ruinous for individuals' personal finances.
That's a really interesting point. By the way, speaking of the markets, Dow was touched 400 on the upside today. The S&P has hit a new record high. I think the NASDAQ hit a high, too. It was up 140 points. Did I write that down a minute ago? 134 it was a minute ago. So what do you see there? What's going on?
Well, I mean, obviously, we still have central banks that are very much on the side of financial markets these days, and Federal Reserve may be ready to take its foot off the gas to some degree. But we've seen a remarkable and, to some degree, confounding move lower in bond market yields. Very surprising. Nobody had that on their radar. And that's a good environment for equities. And at the end of the day, in a low interest rate environment, for those who need to save for retirement, and that's just about everybody, equities are the place to be for the long term. And we hope these valuations aren't crazy, but you still have to be in the would-be game. And so the other part is, John, we're looking at 7% quarterly GDP readings for quarters 2 and 3 and above 6 for 2021. And as you know, the likes of those numbers have not been seen for a couple of generations.
We probably won't see that next year, will we?
No, it should come down. But if we get above 1.8%, which is the Fed's long-term trend, what it identifies as a long-term growth trend for the U.S., and there are predictions that we could do better than 3% next year. The good news is that growth is strong. The bad news is we may be experiencing peak growth. The global economy has to do a lot to get into the game, and I think that's one of the more worrisome aspects right now is the U.S. is leading the pack, but we need the rest of the pack to play along, too.
Will that come around to bite us? I mean, are we going to lead the pack, or are they going to pull us down?
Well, it could be a little of both. Obviously, if you're manufacturing, you're wondering where all your global customers are, but you also have strong demand with all the supply constraints. And that goes back to the vaccinations and the lack of availability in some of these other countries where it now is raging again. So COVID hasn't gone away, and it's dampening economic activity in some of those countries. But I think that, you know, it's a good time for the U.S. economy, and the reopening strains are, I think, better to have than the closing down the economy strains. And I think ultimately vaccinations will become available, you know, globally, and we hope people take advantage of them and have access. And we can put COVID to bed, so to speak. That would be a good thing.
I have just a few seconds left, but what's your thought generally about the values of people's properties? Equities are the place to be right now because nothing else promises much of a return, but real estate does. And yet most of us, if we're lucky, only own one home. But I wonder if real estate is suddenly turning into an important asset class for people.
Well, our recent BankRate survey found that was among the favorites these days, but that's not a sustainable solution for retirement savings. But it's also the way that most people do obtain wealth in our country, and that is through the value of their homes. I view it as I like to live in my home, but I don't view it as an investment. If I make some money on it, and I've been in our home for more than two decades, if I make some money on that, that's good. But in the meantime, you're taxed on it with property taxes. That's one of the rare wealth taxes we have in this country. Jeff Bezos knows that well.
What do you pay in West Virginia? What's a property tax look like?
Well, I don't live in West Virginia, but I live in Maryland, but I'm just visiting West Virginia here. But property taxes, I think, broadly are fairly low in West Virginia. They're high in my home state of Maryland, which is why that BankRate survey found affordability was one of our lowest lack of attributes in the state of Maryland, and our taxes in Maryland are quite high.
Yeah, I took some issue with some of the things. Of course, everybody in every state does because they get very defensive about their place. Although Illinoisans are happy to poo-poo Illinois, but in culture, Wisconsin was about 10 steps higher than Illinois in the culture category. Sir, you need to go back and visit that.
Well, here's what I'd say is that one of the great things about this survey is it gives people the opportunity to think about where they want to live and the attributes of where they're living now and where they might want to retire. And it's great fodder for conversation because by virtue of the fact that we're discussing it right now.
I didn't hear a word you just said. You need to go back and knock Wisconsin down.
Hey, I'm a fan of cheese.
You know, and beer. And that's what somebody sent me right away. They go, the reason Wisconsin's got better culture is because they got better beer. It's nice nice to talk to you, Mark. Thanks for your work.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst, and Cheese Lover at BankRate. Visit BankRate.com. John Williams here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman produces the show. We are 18 stories above downtown Chicago in the Chicago River. Just walked over to our big wall of windows and looked down on the beautiful Green River and saw some kayaks go by. You see it all the time. There's all kinds of boat traffic. But yeah, people in kayaks. The owner and manager of Urban Kayak is on a line, Aaron Gershenson. Aaron, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Are those your kayaks I just saw go by?
The green ones are mine. Yep.
So tell me a little bit about your business. Were you a kayaker who turned businessman, or were you a businessman who thought kayaks are a good idea?
I was a kayaker. I like to rock climb. I do a lot of sports. But kayaking in Chicago seemed like a great idea. I worked at a previous company kayaking and then brought it downtown. And we also have a location on the lakefront in Monroe Harbor right off at Randolph in the lake. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the green kayaks you see are mine. And I own the business with my brother and my high school buddy. So yeah, we got a good thing going.
How's business? I mean, good thing. You know, every question we ask every business owner is, A, how did you do last year? And B, how are you doing this year? So let's do that. Yeah. How did you do last year? How are you doing this year?
Last year was difficult, but we actually did okay. Kayaking is a very good activity for social distancing.
Yeah.
So it was one of the few activities outside that could be safe. So last year we did decent, and this year we're off to a great start. Everyone just wants to get outside and have a good time and do a nice healthy activity. So we're doing well.
Was it hard to persuade, or maybe the business was already in place, but this river traffic, was it hard to persuade the city to allow you to operate a kayak business on the river?
It was difficult, but the waterway community in Chicago is very strong, and they communicate very well. So we all have a nice relationship with all the tour boats and all the companies on the river. So, you know, every customer who comes out with us watches a 7-minute safety video. They do on land training, and then they do some on water training. And these are just, you know, some of the systems we had to put in place to convince the other waterway members that, you know, kayaking could be safe if done correctly.
The development of the River Walk must have just been great for you too, huh?
Yes, it's been fantastic. The Riverwalk traffic has never been busier. The company who runs the Riverwalk is AIS, and they've been fantastic, and they've been great kind of landlords for us. We have the kayak shop on the river, and also in the fall we'll be building a restaurant called Taco Rio right next to the kayak shop.
Oh, no kidding. So where do people get in these boats? How do we do what you do?
Well, I would definitely recommend checking out our website at urbankayaks.com. And so you start by making a reservation at either of our locations, the Riverwalk or the Lakefront. And it's easy. We take beginners. We take intermediate, advanced. All skill levels can come out. You don't have to have experience. If you're a beginner, we recommend one of our guided products on the Chicago River, our historic Chicago tour, where we have an introductory kayaking paddle that's great for beginners. For our more advanced kayakers, you can go out there by yourself and you'll watch a safety video, you'll do on-land training, and then if you can kind of show us that you know what you're doing, we'll let you just rent a kayak and go outside of a group. But the easiest way to book it is right on the website, and it's very simple and self-explanatory, and you'll get a confirmation email with all the directions on what to do and what to wear. And it's very simple.
Do you, so I guess there's two ways to do it. One is up and down the river, and one is out on the lake. Can people go out on the lake,
yeah,
or do they have to stay in the harbor?
They have to stay in the harbor, but the harbor's big. You know, we go all the way Randolph to Roosevelt inside the harbor. You paddle all the way to Museum Campus. And what's great about our lakefront location is we have paddle boards on the lakefront. So not only do we have kayaks, we have paddle boards, and really there's nothing better than going out there on a paddle board. You can bring your dog with you on the front of the paddle board. It's awesome. we have dog life jackets. And you just go out there and relax in the harbor, and you can't beat it.
Are there age restrictions, and how much does it cost to do this?
It starts at $35 per person per hour. We don't really have age restrictions, but to go by yourself in a single kayak or a single paddleboard, you got to be 16, 17.
Mm-hmm.
But we have tandem kayaks, so we have adults take infants in tandem kayaks, and we have infant life jackets. So really, I would say the youngest. We've had infants come out. We've had babies come out. So as long as you have a life jacket that fits, we can get you on the water in a tandem kayak with an adult. But 16 is probably the youngest we want people going off by themselves.
I'm looking at the kayak tours. On a phone line is Aaron Gershenson. Gershenson. What kind of a name is that, by the way, Aaron?
I think it's Russian. Is my heritage.
Gershenson. Have you thought about shortening it for radio? Gershenson, he's the owner and manager of Urban Kayaks. So here's some of the tours. The Historic Chicago Tour, you alluded to that a minute ago. That's along the main branch of the river and maybe like the tour boats. Do you guys actually do some sort of narration then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our guides are fantastic. We give them a huge architecture packet when they get the job and they have to study. And then all of our lead architecture guides have a microphone and megaphones. So everyone's in their own kayak. And
right.
My tour guide he's got a megaphone and he's telling you all about Chicago, all the fun facts about the city. So that's a very popular product.
Yeah. Sunset Tour and Twilight Paddle. Just give me the 411 on that.
Sunset Tour is basically the historic Chicago tour just during sunset, but it's the same. Every tour guide has a little bit different tour. The Twilight Paddle is just our evening product. You know, we were getting a lot of requests for stuff later in the evening, you know, past 7 o'clock. So we put up an 8 o'clock and an 8:30 Twilight Paddle most days. That's just our evening paddle. It's beautiful. You got the whole river to yourself in the evenings. So the daytime, you know, you're dealing with the hustle and bustle of the river. In the evenings, it really slows down, and you kind of have the whole river to yourself, and it's very nice.
Yeah.
Then we got our fireworks paddle. You know, every Wednesday and Saturday, Navy Pier puts on a fireworks show. We do the full historic Chicago tour, and then we come back, and it finishes with the fireworks. And then we have the intro paddle. That's our beginner product, the introductory paddle.
I also saw a happy hour paddle. Happy hour paddle?
Happy hour paddle, yes. That's a very fun product. So we partnered with our friends on the Riverwalk, the island party hut, which is a restaurant right next to us. And so they do an hour paddle with us, and then they get a drink ticket, and then they can go drink one beer at the tiki bar. And you know, the drink's got to be after kayaking, definitely not before.
Yeah, let's not drink and paddle or whatever.
No.
Do people wear helmets then? Do they wear helmets when they're in the kayaks?
Some people do wear helmets. That's optional. We don't offer helmets. It's kind of a bring-your-own-helmet situation. They have to wear a life jacket, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide life jackets. And, we have all the gear, so you don't need to show up with anything. We got everything you need right there at the shop.
Aaron Gershenson is the owner and manager at Urban Kayaks. So that's the website, urbankayaks.com. Now, what a great time, and so great to see your boats. I look out the window all the time, and I watch the big tour boats, I watch the barges, I watch the motorboats. But when you see like a line of ducks, a bunch of kayaks going down the river, it looks like so much fun. I wish you nothing but success, Aaron.
Thank you very much, John. You have an open invitation to come out with you and your family anytime you like.
Yeah, I'll take you up on that. UrbanKayaks.com. 12:45 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A second bond upgrade for Illinois. This time it's from S&P Global Ratings, which upgraded its ratings on Illinois debt from BBB- to BBB. That's considered a lower medium investment grade, but Illinois had been just one level above junk status. S&P also upgraded the debt of the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, which operates McCormick Place. Moody's also recently upgraded Illinois debt, and like Moody's, S&P cited a reduction in short-term debt, new limits on state spending, and improving economic conditions in Illinois. S&P last upgraded Illinois debt in 1997. Chicago restaurant Spiaggia is closing permanently. The Michelin-starred Italian eatery had been a fixture in Chicago for 37 years at 980 North Michigan. A post on the restaurant's website says they were unsuccessful in efforts to restructure a soon-to-expire lease. It never reopened post-pandemic. Spiaggia's sister restaurant in the same building, Cafe Spiaggia, also will not reopen. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Sorry to hear that, Steve. Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, how about that Spiaggia? Well, that was surprising.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a fixture of Chicago fine dining for a long time. Well, it's Mr. Fizz Friday, John, and if you have followed his advice on planting and watering and weeding and fertilizing, your garden probably looks great and it's producing a lot of food right now. Oh, and the paperwork, how about the paperwork? Oh, you were told there would be no paperwork? Not by our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell, you weren't. Get out the notebook, sharpen your pencil.
You know, gardens are at their peak right now. It's a good time to get out and take a look at how things are doing. And what you need to do really is to carefully cruise your garden and make notes of the things that look good and also the things that need attention. In the vegetable garden, what about the varieties that didn't produce the way you thought they should, or ones that are too tall, the tomato plants that you thought were dwarfs and end up being 6 feet tall, ones that are diseased? A lot of times we can avoid diseases by the varieties that we pick. Or maybe the stuff is not what you expected. Or maybe there's too much of a good thing, like too many zucchinis. You put in a dozen plants and you only need two or three. In the flower garden, again, diseased plants. It's important to look at those things. And plants that are falling over are too tall for the spot. Or you don't like the color. Sometimes the wrong colors are there next to each other, and you can do something about that. And incidentally, particularly with the perennials, while they're out there, label the things while they're in bloom so you can figure out what they are. In the lawn, lots of times by now we can see a jumble of many kinds of grasses, weeds, and so forth. areas that need replacement in the fall. The shrub garden, sometimes these things get overgrown and need to be replaced, or maybe past winters have killed them out. But this is a time to record these things in your notebook, and when you do that, begin to make plans for correcting when the season is over.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. At the Chicago Board of Trade, a mixed bag today with beans 6 cents higher, but corn is down about 8 cents a bushel, and wheat's trading about 2 cents lower. At the Merck, hogs and cattle are higher today. From the farm to your belly, today is National Sugar Cookie Day, and if you like pina coladas, tomorrow's National Pina Colada Day. Have a great weekend. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Ryan Ory covers commercial real estate for the Chicago Tribune. Ryan, we asked you to join us today, not knowing that the Tribune would credit almost WGN Radio and Anna DeVlantis for her interview with Maria Pappas for maybe helping to usher out Target from Water Tower Place. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. And actually, that's taking more credit or blame than we deserve. Maria Pappas said it. Anna didn't even ask her about it, but there it was. And now Target's not going to be in Water Tower Place. I'm sure there were many more factors other than some snippy remarks from Pappas, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, that is funny timing, as you mentioned. So when Macy's left Water Tower Place, announced it was leaving back at the beginning of the year, there have been rumors that Target was looking at taking over a block of that space, which is a huge space. And then on your airwaves, Maria Pappas, the Cook County Treasurer, took offense to that as a potential tenant. She lives near there and said that that's not a good fit for that high profile space on Michigan Avenue. And that created kind of a bunch of conversation about, you know, what is a good tenant or a reasonable tenant for that space. And now here we are a few months later, and I did report last night that Target has backed off its plans and apparently is not pursuing.
Well, I'm going to answer that question. Who would be a good tenant for that space? Someone whose checks don't bounce. It was remarkably tinny on her part. I mean, she just didn't seem to have a very good read on the real estate on Michigan Avenue, and she said that. And now, going on a year later, it really sounds dumb. I can't imagine, though, that what she said was the deciding factor, right? There must have been a myriad of reasons why a Target does or doesn't come into the Gold Coast, correct?
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of factors at play right now because of the pandemic and because of some other issues that are already made for a tricky retail and real estate market heading into the pandemic. There are a lot of big spaces to fill on Michigan Avenue, and certainly that's one of the most high profile spaces to come available on Michigan Avenue in a long time. And I think it's going to take a while to play out because right now, Michigan Avenue rents are very high. And
are they still? Where's the pendulum on that? I mean, it would seem to me with all of the real estate available, over 25% of the storefronts, that rates would come down or at least tenants would start to move in. Is it going to get worse or is it going to get better soon?
Well, I do think there's, from everything I hear, I do think there's a little bit of a standoff because the owners of real estate on Michigan Avenue are accustomed to getting very high rents and they don't want to relent and come too far down. And, then you have tenants that are out sort of looking for a good bargain in these difficult times. And there's going to have to, at some point be, a meeting of the minds where, both sides can agree to something. Some landlords are willing to let a space, sit vacant for a couple of years to get the best deal. And over time, they feel like they will make that up in that lost rent for those couple of years with a long-term higher paying deal. But there's, besides the pandemic, there were the incidents of property damage. There's been a lot of theft and other incidents, and there's just a lot going on and a lot for tenants to consider. And certainly I don't know that Maria Paps's comments were the factor that, that caused Target to back off. It could, the alderman speculated it could have been one of the, it was probably a factor, but I don't think it was likely the factor.
Understood. Talk to me about Chase eyeing sites for a potential new skyscraper. Would this be a big building? Have a lot of office space, wouldn't it?
Yes. So Chase, it has its well-known Chase Tower in the Loop, and kind of an iconic building. But that's a building that's built in the '60s. They haven't had they haven't had a chance to do a major overhaul of their space. And in the meantime, Bank of America just moved into a brand new office building. BMO is getting set to move into a brand new building. And Chase has been out in the market looking at potential sites for what would be a very large new building and potentially as much as 1 million square feet, which would be one of the largest office leases Chicago's seen in a long time.
Kidding. You say it's going to be a 60-story if it goes as planned, Chase Tower. It's in the Chicago Tribune today, chicagotribune.com. I'm out of time right now, Ryan, but we'll catch up on the rest of your news maybe next week. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
Ryan Ory writes about commercial real estate for the Tribune.